It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating, in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, featuring thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines the debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to our website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts of all past shows there. I've had some great topics and some wonderful guests. And you can also connect with me on social media, should you wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, the show website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. And on the homepage, there are tabs at the top for guests and topics, which makes it easy to browse and choose the podcast that you want to listen to when you want. So I encourage you to check that out. Well, this week, as my special guests from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing two of the directors of the documentary Hands On, award-winning filmmaker Liz Miller in Montreal and first-time director Mary Kiyo in Kenya. A collaborative project of the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, Hands On profiles five women from four continents tackling climate change through policy, protest, education, and innovation. The film powerfully demonstrates how women are transferring knowledge and local networks into hands-on strategies. Hands On was broadcast on television in India and Kenya and screened at the climate talks in Paris. Filmmaker Liz Miller is a professor in communication studies at Concordia University in Montreal and an award-winning documentary maker whose films and transmedia projects offer new and critical perspectives on gender, social movements and media. Her films, web initiatives and media campaigns on such issues as water privatisation, gender violence and immigration have won numerous awards and been used in educational curricula around the world. Liz teaches courses in media production, the politics of food and film, methods in research creation, Latin American film and more. And having lived in Central and South America for over 6 years, she continues to collaborate with groups in the region, providing training to human rights, labor and women's organizations in media production, digital storytelling and media advocacy campaigns. Liz is also a board member of Cinema Politica, the largest non-commercial community and campus-based documentary screening network in the world. And she's an active member of the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, having served on the board for 6 years. First-time director Mary Kiyo from Kenya is committed to telling stories on democracy and governance issues to keep citizens informed on the change they can bring to their society. Mary is the founder and lead consultant at Rashani Consultancy Services and is a broadcast media professional with 15 years' experience working in and with various media houses and media development organizations. Mary is a trainer, facilitator, moderator, and mentor with extensive experience in the areas of online safety for women, conflict-sensitive journalism, democracy and governance issues, election reporting, health journalism, humanitarian media, and disaster management, road safety, and child rights. Mary is also a freelance journalist and has authored a children's book. Well, welcome to the show, Liz and Mary.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Well, thank you so much. And Liz, I wanted to ask you, you're using art to convey powerful messages. I'm wondering if you can remember the first time that you became aware of the power of art to affect us on a deep level as well as entertain us.
I would say I was probably a young adult. I was working in Central America, and my job at the time was to place students in internships. So I was an academic coordinator, and I was finding meaningful job experiences for students from Canada and the United States who wanted to work in Central America. And I remember meeting so many incredible people and thinking, these are stories I wish I could be sharing with other people. And I was a photojournalist at the time. And it was in that moment that I began thinking about the role of documentary and moving images and how might we be connecting powerful stories of social change from people from diverse places. And I guess that was the catalyst. So it's art, but it's also story.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I'm wondering, did you grow up in a creative environment, would you say?
Yes, I would say that my mom was always interested in the arts. She draws and she takes photographs, and she was probably my biggest inspiration. And in high school, we didn't have as many art programs or courses that they have now. Mm. But I would say if there's an artistic inspiration in my life, it would be my mom.
Ah, okay. And what attracted you to film as your art form, do you think, rather than, you know, say, perhaps writing or something, you know, in another artistic line?
It was probably the fact that I see film as a means of documenting a time or a moment or a place, but it's also a creative catalyst for a good conversation. And so there's something magic that happens when you push record and suddenly the focus of two people, as you were saying, kind of exploring and discussing, as you said in your opening, it offers this meaningful potential for two people to have a deep conversation. So it's a catalyst. Media is a catalyst. And I love learning from people. I like talking to people. I like conversation. So I think this was the art form that suited me, because it's also, once you've recorded a conversation, then you have the chance to sit with it, to reflect on it. Editing is a process of working around and with somebody else's story. So it offers a more reflective space. So I guess those two elements are what attracted me to this medium. I should say,
yeah,
there are times now, because the camera has become so omnipresent in our lives, that I think that, you know, taking a walk can be a work of art, that that stepping away from our screens is actually increasingly important to me.
So yes, yeah.
The impulse that first drew me to media is now an impulse that I try to balance in my life.
Interesting. Yeah. And what drew you to documentary filmmaking to highlight issues rather than, say, dealing with those issues through fiction?
Well, I would say that I came to documentary film as like a social advocate. And I think there was a way that I was feeling that I needed to bring creativity to my political engagement. So I was very active, and I thought I could probably share what I'm witnessing and what I think I need to be communicating in a more creative means. And fiction is a very exciting medium, and I think we often, it's a collaborative art practice, but there's something quite simple about the documentary camera. A lot of the way I work is I film and I edit myself, and so there's a kind of intimacy that a documentary lens, that a major feature fictional film might not offer. But I think they both have their strengths. I think especially when you're dealing with really sensitive issues, like I have in my own work, sometimes you wish you could draw on the form of fiction. I think they both have strengths, and I guess I've chosen documentary because of the flexibility of me being able to be in the world and capture something on my own in a quite simple way.
Yeah. I mentioned in the introduction that you're an experienced filmmaker and Mary is a first-time director on this project. I was wondering, can you remember what your first project was?
I do remember. When I was working in this job in Central America, it was my boss said to me, I had been there 3 or 4 years, and she said, I want to help you develop your next skill. I want to give you a gift for what you've given to this organization. What do you want to learn? And I said, oh, I want to learn documentary filmmaking, because I had been a photojournalist and I was taking photographs. And so she found a local filmmaker. This was in Costa Rica. And this local filmmaker gave me a 10-day workshop.
Wow.
And we made a film about the institute that I worked for at the time. Hmm. This lovely woman, Sandra Kinghorn, she was passionate about animals. And so any stray animal that she found on the street came into the institute. And this created kind of conflicts, because it was a language institute and an educational institute. And so these crazy cats and dogs and stray animals would make enormous noise and people felt agitated. But my boss was doing it because she had this big empathetic heart and she wanted to save animals in the street. But it actually caused a dilemma in her business, in her, you know, in the educational institute. So that was my first short film, was documenting this small conflict playing out in my workplace.
Oh, that's interesting. I could conjure that up, all those sort of animals kind of running around the institute. Whether that was the case or not, I don't know. But
it was a very dynamic workplace.
Now, Hands-On profiles 5 women from 4 continents tackling climate change. How did this particular project come into being?
The International Association of Women in Television and Radio is an organization that has over 300 members from all over the world. And about, maybe it's 8 years ago, we decided that we would make these short documentaries. We would provide funding, a small amount of seed funding, for women around the world to make short films. And Hands-On was the first time we looked at each other and we said, what if we tried to make a collaborative documentary rather than these small seed grants? We'll try to make one piece together. And maybe the impact of what we come up with will be bigger. And so we chose the theme of climate change because we also felt that this was a theme that we wanted to educate ourselves more on. How, as women communicators from around the world, are we representing one of the biggest issues of our time, and an issue that people experience fatigue with, an issue that has been going on and that is quite difficult to represent? And so we wanted to implicate ourselves as an organization. We chose this theme as our first collaborative documentary, and it also became a challenge to us of how we could make the form match the message. So we also realized that rather than having one director kind of fly around the world and create this carbon impact, that we actually had the perfect equation for a more green production. And by encouraging, you know, directors from different places to stay local and to find a woman in their community or in their close surroundings who was not only experiencing the problems of climate change, but was also responding with innovation. And so we were doing two things. We wanted to have a more green production, kind of make the message match, the media match the message. But we also wanted to look at women who might inspire other people. So rather than just focus on the complexity of the problem, we also wanted to focus on the complexity of facing that problem.
Absolutely.
And that's where the Hands-On came.
You know, right.
How are women responding with hands-on responses? And what we see is that women around the world are really at the forefront of climate change. And yet, I think that this was one of the first films that explicitly is about women and climate change. And we wanted to look at the intersectionality of, well, if a woman is addressing a problem in her community, for example, in the aftermath of a big storm, and she decides to get training in how to read the waves and how to read satellite information so that she can deliver that information to local fishermen, how might that also shift other parts of her life? How is she seen in the family after this? What kind of support and training did she need to be a better community advocate? That's one of the stories that we tell from India. And so we really wanted to stretch our imaginations and stretch our practices of how are we representing some of the challenges women are facing, because they are at the forefront of this issue.
Oh, fabulous. And if you just joined us, I'm talking to my special guest this week, two of the directors of the documentary Hands On, Liz Miller in Montreal and Mary Kiyo in Kenya. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Film Festival by USA Today readers. The Cinequest Film Festival runs March 1st through 13th in San Jose. Here's Cinequest co-founder Kathleen Powell talking recently on It's a Question of Balance.
I was wondering why you chose Silicon Valley to base the festival in.
Oh my gosh. You know, Silicon Valley is such a unique place. It's where creativity and innovation come together to empower. And that's our vision with Cinequest. This is where it all happens. We want every individual that walks through the door to feel like the value that they got far exceeds what they ever put into it.
Presenting Maverick Spirit winners James Franco and Rita Moreno and 129 premiere films, Cinequest invites you to join artists, innovators and film lovers from all walks of life, March 1st through 13th. Festival passes and packages available now at cinequest.org. That's cinequest.org.
Do you like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ocean blast, but steam lane. No white horses to play the game. About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, baby, just goes nowhere.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, two directors from the documentary Hands On, Liz Miller in Montreal and Mary Kiyo in Kenya. So we were talking specifically about Hands On before the break, Liz, and you mentioned it was supported by the International Association of Women in Radio and Television. Can you tell us a bit about that organization and how it supports women in the media generally, apart from supporting projects like this?
Yes, absolutely. The International Association of Women in Television and Radio has almost a 50-year history and is actually a member of the United Nations. It was founded as an organization that supported women in organizations like initially broadcast organizations like the Norwegian Broadcasting Association. But over the last, I'd say, 20 years, it's been increasingly supportive of independent filmmakers, radio producers, and it's a organization that shifts to change, one, the way women are represented in mass media, but also shifts to offer opportunities for training, for small seed grants, as I mentioned before. And so it's an organization that brings women together from all over the world to share issues on how do we represent the complexity of violence against women, how do we represent climate change, but also how do we ensure that our voices are in the mainstream in the way that we want them represented. We have chapters in Cambodia, India, Moldova, Norway, South Africa, Uganda, Cameroon, Kenya, Nepal, Philippines, Tanzania, the United States. So it's,
wow.
I have to say, I, as a result of being a member of IAWRT, I feel like I have a network, an extremely powerful network of extremely smart, engaged women around the world who are devoting their lives to the representation of complex issues, and in particular, how gender plays out in the media.
Yeah. There's still a staggeringly small number of women in the media, even in Western countries. Do you see progress in the voice and influence of women increasing?
What I see is that we have this consolidation of certain mainstream organizations that are primarily still run by men in power, but we also have a proliferation of alternative media organizations, and I think women are head of initiative.
Liz, I'm sorry, your line is really breaking up. Could I ask you to call back in? And I'm going to go and talk to Mary for a little bit, if you could call back in.
You know what? I'm going to stay on the line.
And actually, now it sounds fine. Now it sounds fine. Oh, I don't know. Maybe. Anyway.
I've got a backup phone.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sounding better now. So, sorry, I cut you off at the end there because we couldn't hear what you were saying. Do you see some progress in the voice and influence of women increasing?
I do see influence in the voice of women in the media. And at the same time, there's an increase of women experts, of women in the media. There's also a rising amount of violence against women. So we've been doing, for example, workshops on training women to tell stories in conflict areas like Egypt, like Tunisia. We've been helping women who are living in very complex circumstances better protect themselves, because we are seeing more investigative journalists. We're seeing more women assume the risks of what it means to tell complex stories. And so we're doing everything we can to offer training and ensure that our network is there for women when they do encounter complexities in the field.
Right. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I'm going to go and talk to Mary now, and then I'm going to come back to you, Liz, and talk to both of you a bit more about hands-on. So, Mary, you work devising creative ways to convey important information through the written word, workshops, radio pieces, and now film. I'm wondering whether you grew up in a creative environment, would you say?
Yes, I did. In terms of when I look at it from my mom's perspective, she always was the kind of person who liked taking lots of pictures.
Mm.
And she also did a lot of, making quite a number of things that were in the house at that time. She made quite a number of things within the house. So in that regard, and also my younger sister, when she grew up to a certain extent, she was very creative with her hands. So I've always had these creative people around me who are willing to make things out of their hands. But I don't make things out of my hands. I'm the kind of person who uses a lot of my brain and what is it called, like talking a lot.
Well, that's good for the media. You're an experienced media consultant and journalist, but I understand this is your first time directing film. I'm wondering what attracted you to directing?
What was interesting about it was moving away from, especially because I've done quite a number of pieces in radio, was moving away from how to create images using sound to actually making people to see rather than just telling them. And that for me was totally new for me because I was so used to creating images in people's minds. But the fact that I could be involved in a project where we could be able to tell stories using visual, actually seeing what you're talking about was really key for me. And so for me, that it was also an exciting area to be part of. All along, I'd been involved in just mainly radio and also in print, but the TV was an exciting area for me to try out.
How did you become involved in the hands-on project?
Well, it all started with the call for application that came through IWAT, and they asked if we could share ideas on what to do around climate change. And since climate change had been something I'd always wanted to work on and had some ideas around what I wanted to do, I sent in my idea, and then the idea was selected, and that's how I got involved in the project.
Oh.
So had I not sent the idea, I don't think I'd have been part of the project.
Right. So they reached out and you reached back.
Yes.
So the film Hands On, and you just did a recent radio feature on carbon trading, both deal with protecting the environment. I'm wondering, where does your passion come from for this issue?
The main aspect was around the woman's story behind it all, because for me, I've always been interested in listening to the story about the woman and how she's impacting change within the society. If I may just go a little bit and explain around the carbon trading story. Initially, my idea was around the group of women who are actually using energy savings tools in terms of to cook with it. Mm. And this was in turn saving them the number of wood. They just need two pieces of wood in order to do the cooking, which is not usual in most of the traditional ways of cooking in Africa. So one of the things that caught me about it is that these women were not going out to the forest so much in order to cut so many trees and spend so much time looking for even trees to cut down. They were actually finding innovative ways of still using the tree, but in a sustainable way. So that was initially the story idea, but I had to enlarge it. But the story about carbon trading came out when I learned about the way they were also earning money from this particular piece, and hence that's where the carbon trading story came from. And so even linking it to the hands-on project, the fact that it was also looking for those specific women who are making changes within the environment was also something that I was passionate about, and the fact that they are actually dealing with local communities. I like stories that have the voices of the people who are not just based in the city centers, but people who are actually based at the grassroots levels.
I'm wondering, are there specific challenges in Kenya in making film, would you say, or is it just similar to anywhere?
I think any unique challenges is, of course, for us, it's quite an, when it comes to resources, when you start thinking about coming up with a piece, like it's usually not very easy, because to bring in the various people into play is not easy. I mean, I had Liz saying that she can actually go out, shoot it, and do it everything by herself, but not all of us have that skill. Especially now, like for me, I don't have that particular skill. I have the knack to probably see where the story idea is and how I visualize it coming to place, but I don't have the skills to actually do the camera work myself. So I think that's where some of the challenges arise. I'm not saying that all directors in Kenya like me, I'm just talking about probably a fraction of us, but the fraction I'm talking about is it's usually quite a huge undertaking when you start thinking of what it might take in terms of resources and the people you'd need in place. But apart from that, if you have a committed team that is willing to work very fast and they know exactly what you want to do, cutting the costs usually helps us take over that challenge of not having enough resources.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You also were leading workshops, helping people to prepare for environmental crises such as drought and El Nino. Do you find a creative approach helps with conveying important information in these situations?
Yes. Most of the training that I conduct around this area ensure that you bring in humanitarian actors and media, especially we identify radio journalists. And what happens is that when we bring them together into one place, we try to think about possible scenarios of what might happen in case the drought takes place and what might actually happen. And then from that perspective, we start planning backwards and say, okay, we are not in the drought situation right now, but the indications right now, the weather patterns, show that we could be headed to a time probably where there'll be no rain or there'll be too much rain. So what do we need to tell the people? And so having the ideas coming from the humanitarian actors and also the media and trying to see how we can merge their story ideas, the ideas in such a way that when these stories are told on radio and they reach out to the people on the ground, it can provide practicable information that they can actually use with instruments around them. For instance, if it was something around how do we ensure that water, we keep our water safe, what do we do about it? How do I boil my water? How do I know that my water is boiled? You know, so just explaining simple things that can have such a huge impact on somebody's livelihood and is one of the things that I really love when we are having the moments of discussing and breaking down and thinking about the messages. And at the end of the workshops, we make sure that we have those messages translated into radio programs and also, if possible, also quick press briefs that would help any media person who is not there to understand the information instead of using complicated terms that humanitarian actors usually use when trying to communicate to the population.
When you say humanitarian actors, do you mean actors like role-playing, or do you mean people just involved in humanitarian issues?
No, people who are involved in humanitarian issues. I'm sorry, I'm using the...
No, it's okay. I had this vision of you creating like little plays. Yes. I thought perhaps you were creating little plays that were role-playing these situations. So maybe that's an idea
actually,
that you
we
could do.
Actually, no. We actually do have role plays. For us to be able to understand the community, we have to have role plays. And the role plays are usually set out in such a way of for instance, if you needed to enact a situation where there are those who are affected and they have not received this information, would have them, like for instance, bombarding into the meeting, you know, a scenario where they're meeting with them saying, hey, you people, you're just having meetings all the time and no one is talking to us. You don't know what to do. The drought is here with us. You know, so how we ask them, how would you react in such a situation where people are coming and they're saying you're not giving them the life-saving information that they require? So from that perspective, we do also utilize role play and also make sure that at times we have them actually being interviewed live for those humanitarian people to make sure that they, when they are speaking, they're also aware of what they're saying and having feedback sessions where they're able to understand that I use complicated terms that probably the population will not use. And
right.
So We make sure that there are quite a number of scenarios throughout the whole training.
Right, yeah. Oh, sounds great. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, two directors from the documentary Hands On, Liz Miller in Montreal and Mary Kiyo in Kenya. We'll be back after these messages. Film Festival by USA Today readers. The Cinequest Film Festival runs March 1st through 13th in San Jose. Here's Cinequest co-founder Kathleen Powell talking recently on It's a Question of Balance.
I was wondering why you chose Silicon Valley to base the festival in.
Oh my gosh, you know, Silicon Valley is such a unique place. It's where creativity and innovation come together to empower, and that's our vision with Cinequest. This is where it all happens. We want every individual that walks through the door to feel like the value that they got far exceeds what they ever put into it.
Presenting Maverick Spirit winners James Franco and Rita Moreno and 129 premiere films, Cinequest invites you to join artists, innovators and film lovers from all walks of life, March 1st through 13th. Festival passes and packages available now at cinequest.org. That's cineqest.org.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, two directors from the documentary Hands On, award-winning filmmaker Liz Miller in Montreal and first-time director Mary Kiyo in Kenya. And by the miracle of technology, we are all able to speak to each other. I'm in the USA, so we're doing pretty well here, basically, with our communications. It's wonderful to be able to have the three of us talking in this way and sharing it with you out there. We've been talking about the documentary Hands On, which features five different women making a difference in their local communities for climate change. And Mary, in the film, you profile Annabelle Waititu. What inspired you to want to tell Annabelle's story?
Annabelle is this lady who is so knowledgeable around issues on climate change. But beyond that, she's the kind of woman who talks about climate change to the people who are actually in areas beyond her usual workplaces. She's the kind of person who goes to international forums and is able to come down to the people on the ground and translate that information in a language or in a way that they can easily understand. And the kind of solutions that she has, or and how she, beyond just having solutions on what people can do around climate change issues, is that she's really hands-on. She's the kind of person that when she goes somewhere, she probably holds a workshop. For her, it's not just a one-off workshop. She stays through the whole process until the changes start being realized. And so for me, when I just saw the call for this application, I was just like, I had Annabelle in mind because I had seen her in action before, and I knew that she would be great around this. And she's also very natural herself. Yeah, so that's what I liked about her. She lives what she talks about. It's not just about her work.
Oh, that's wonderful. Liz mentioned earlier, there's a somewhat of a fatigue, certainly in Western countries, about climate change. How aware are people in Kenya, you know, the average person, how aware are they of climate change?
Well, I believe they're quite aware. The issue is not that we refer to it. We might not just say climate change. We might just be like, the weather is changing today, you know.
Yes,
use whatever, you know, use it in different languages. But it's something that we are already seeing on a daily basis. Like,
right. The
sun is too hot right now. When the rains come, they don't come as they used to in the past. Like, we could actually time them. So it's something that people are aware about and are now getting concerned about what we can do. There have been some measures which have been going on, of course, on a national platform where we're always encouraged to grow trees, and at times even the president or, anyone in the high level leads the tree planting initiative. And that is also translating back to the people on the ground. They're starting to see that if we don't have many trees, it means that we're not able to attract as much rain. These are practices that we had in the past, only that with modernization, which we've allowed, is when we're realizing we need to go back to the way things were.
We might not
be caught in the big words of the climate change, but in our own ways, you're just looking and saying, hey, things are changing, and it has to do something with us. But most of the changes are being done out of Nairobi. Within Nairobi, I mean, that's the city center of Kenya, is that, of course, there's more pollution because of walkers and everything. But there are some initiatives that people are running, like, for instance, coming up with cycling groups that encourage people, like, let's cycle more rather than drive cars. But it's a hard sell, but yeah.
Yes, yeah. I wanted to ask you, Liz, if listeners are interested in watching the film, what is the best way for them to do that?
What they should do is, we have a website where the film is actually streaming for free. You can get to it through redlizardmedia.com/climateandgender. And perhaps we could do a link to that on your, if you have a website.
Yes, I'll put that on the podcast page. So if you go to itsaquestionofbalance.com, listeners, and you choose the podcast for Liz and Mary, I'll have all the information about both of them and website links to the film and other interesting information.
Yeah, and we also have Spanish and French versions of the film. So we're getting requests from all over the world. And the beauty of having made this as a women's organization is that we want it everywhere. And so the more exposure, the better around this issue.
I was wondering if you had a particular audience in mind when you were making the film. I was going to ask both of you. First, you, Liz, who do you hope that the film reaches?
Well, I teach at a university here in Montreal, and I always feel like I have my students sitting on my shoulder because I think the next generation has a lot to address. And I think inspiring them that small things can go a long way, that working in collaboration, and your message that creative work makes an impact in the world, that doing something creative is a way of bringing people together and bringing aesthetics into practice. And so I was we wanted to ensure that we had young women in the film, that we had people that they could really readily identify with. So I was thinking of like the next generation of women who are going to change the world.
Mm. And what about you, Mary? What audience did you have in mind that you hope the film will reach?
The everyday person who would be able to see what is going on, to see what is going on and see how they can practically be involved in it, something that is not complicated, something they could start, an initiative that they could also start back at home and relate with also the information that they are getting. So I was looking at the everyday kind of person, like me, who would want to know what to do so as to make sure that you're mitigating towards climate change.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the inspiring things about the film is that the women in it have just, and they're sort of a range of ages, but they've just got up off their seat and are doing something, you know, even if perhaps they didn't know exactly how they were going to do it. They've just started doing it and something that really impacts their local community. So I think that in itself is empowering for any audience in any context, really, even not thinking about climate change. You know, it sort of radiates out into other areas of life as well. Would you agree with that, Liz?
Yeah, absolutely. They're so inspiring. And you're right. It's like change isn't always the big macro effort. Sometimes it's just getting up in the morning and doing something meaningful. And so, for example, the first profile, it's a young woman who's 23 years old, and she's in charge of the only youth organization in Norway, but she's leading 7,000 members.
Yes.
But, you know, you just sort of see her running a meeting and going to her home in the Arctic where she lives. It was her hometown, which is also the largest coral reef in the world. And she's worried that the next stage of extraction will impact that coral reef. So she's just taking very ordinary daily steps to raise awareness in her community. And then suddenly we're able to use the film to raise awareness in all of our respective communities.
Mm. Hands-On deals with five women from four continents, and thus, due to the different languages, the whole film is subtitled. I wanted to ask you, Liz, are there extra creative challenges if you're making a documentary with subtitles?
You know, what was interesting is actually that every country in the world, there are different formats. And so we, like, how you shoot a film in... there wasn't just language is what I wanted to say, but there's also the issue of formats and editing. So it was pretty challenging bringing these stories together. Everybody created a 12-minute piece that they were also disseminating in their own respective countries if they wanted. And then we put together the film about nine minutes, and we wove those together with original animations that helped kind of provide the context of each country. Was also a visual motif, but yeah, it was quite challenging. The subtitles, the different formats, and you know, sending files back and forth. But I think because we were all invested in this issue and we got to know each other, and so we kind of became this informal collective.
Yeah. Which
and
is interesting.
The beautiful thing is we actually all came together at one of our conferences and workshopped the film, which was really amazing because we had feedback from, you know, some of the most skilled women communicators sitting around saying, okay, well, this is good, but maybe you should tweak that. And so we really had a blast doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that is a part of a creative process as well, is kind of the team you bring together and what you learn from each other. And I mean, I've just learned so much from Mary, for example. I remember thinking one of the things that comes up in her segment is the idea that most farms in Kenya are run by women. They're small agricultural farms. And so if these women aren't part of like larger conversations around policy, we're kind of missing the boat. And I just remember the afternoon that I was looking at Mary's piece and thinking, oh, okay, so this is agriculture in Kenya, and this is similar to another place. So it really kind of opened up a lot of conversations amongst us.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you ever physically meet? Because making a film, although you said it was carbon friendly with never meeting, that must have challenges. So it's nice that you did get to have that, you know, actual physical meeting.
Yeah, I think for me it made the world of difference. It's like now I feel like Mary and I could collaborate on something in the future. Like we set the path of understanding, and I think we'll have to start brainstorming our next production.
So, Mary, I wanted to ask you, Hands On was your first film. Do you see yourself going on to make more films?
I hope so. I mean, it was really exciting. I mean, one of the things is, just going back to Liz for a moment, is that Liz was one of the people who made me feel really relaxed about doing this, even if it was the first time. And so having somebody like her mentoring on a larger level on what I was doing and not even interfering with the creativity around how I came up with the piece was really great. And with the team that I worked with, in fact, they were really supportive and very good at their job. And so it's something that I'd really like to keep on doing.
Yes, well, I hope that comes to fruition for you. It's certainly a good first start, Mary. And we've just got a couple of minutes left, Liz, so I just wanted to ask you very briefly. I know Hands On has inspired a new project for you. Can you tell us very quickly about that?
Yes, well, I'm working on an interactive documentary, and it's called The Shoreline. And basically, I got very excited about this idea of drawing on networks and how we can tell big stories but do it through small segments. And so it's an interactive documentary with 40 short segments of 4 minutes each of looking at people who are working along the shorelines trying to make change. So at the shoreline, what we see is the increase of storms, and we see rising sea levels. And one would think, oh, well, that means maybe we should start rethinking the way we develop our shorelines. But instead, we still have this approach of kind of fortifying and building condominiums. And so the interactive kind of unlocks this way that we've been managing our shorelines. And the shoreline is also a metaphor because it's a boundary that is not municipally based. It's not country based. The shoreline connects all of us, and it's kind of a new way of thinking about how we govern our local communities, how we govern, how we protect our resources. And so the whole process of making Hands On really made me want to continue telling short stories that could move through classrooms, that could move through conferences,
yeah,
that could inspire people to rethink the way we've been managing our natural resources and begin to form new collaborations and new ways of protecting our shores, especially in light of rising sea levels.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, we should look forward to that. And I want to thank you both very much for coming on the show. Thank you, Mary. Oh, Mary, I was just thanking you for coming on. And Liz, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We love your program. And it's just such a privilege to have this conversation. Thank you for facilitating that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And just to let listeners know again that you can find a link to watch the film on the show website. It's aquestionofbalance.com. Just go to the podcast for this show and there'll be links there all about Mary and Liz. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.